Greetings, and welcome to Class 7. The Repairer. This is a critical component of conflict. If you're serious about learning conflict, this one is key to learn. And most of us have a pretty limited way of doing this one. So we'll get right into it. All right, so in this class, I'm going to mention briefly my availability, because that's come up recently. The nest I want to talk about. The repair, of course. How to clean up current and past hurts. The apology versus the acknowledgement. And when you know you're done. So let's dive in. My availability is limited. I'm learning. And this is kind of, you know, this course is it's the first time I've taught this exact course. So you're getting me learning as I go in different ways also. So I'm learning alongside you, just I'm learning different things. So if you want more of me, you got to hire me. So sometimes I'm going to respond to you, and sometimes I'm not. And sometimes I am going to respond to you in the Facebook group, and sometimes I'm not. And you're welcome to tag me, ask more, and I've told most of you that. And many of you are doing that, which is great. And I still sometimes am not going to answer your questions. And know that it's not personal, and I'm doing my very best to answer questions and make time for this. And my priority in those moments is with my clients who are seeing me privately, who pay me a lot of money to get a result. So that's what where my energy and time goes. So I think I'm showing up pretty darn well, personally, giving myself a very high score for how I'm delivering here. And I'm always open to feedback. If something doesn't work for you, let me know. I also won't be getting into personal back and forth, whether it's a conflict or not. I'm here to do my job, which is teach, and teach through example, and I don't have anything to work out with you. You might have something to work out with me, and you're going to use the method and do all kinds of things. I'm not available for that conversation. I remember for years, if I'm taking a course or doing a meditation experience or in graduate school, and I have something with the teacher, it usually says something about me, that I have something going on, and actually the teacher is triggering my dad stuff or my mom stuff is typically what the deal is, and I need to go work on that. And sometimes I would try to get the teacher enrolled in something with me, to work it out with me, and I'm recommending you don't do that here, that you take that elsewhere, because it's most likely about you and you're going to reveal something, okay? I have my own places I go to work out my stuff, which is an ongoing journey, and beautiful and just right. So hopefully that sums that up. All right. Your work. So, you know, this is a big here, which is to learn how to tolerate your experience for the rest of your life. If you're serious about conflict and learning the art and skill of relationship in general with kids, coworkers, friends, lovers, parents, yourself, one of the skills to master is the big reason relationships fail, which is arousal regulation. You need to learn how to be with your own experience. And I haven't talked much about that in this course. I want to underscore that because it's coming up in different ways here in different people. And this is so key. So before I freak out with my kids or my partner, it's important that I can call a timeout on myself and be with what's happening. And this is going to be a game changer if you learn how to do this. Because you go from, you know, flipping your lid into the back part of your brain or the downstairs part of your brain, the upstairs part of your brain goes offline, right? The prefrontal cortex. Now you're downstairs in your animal brain and you're acting like an animal. So it's your job and your job only to learn how to make that go from nanoseconds of trigger to 1 second to two to three, so you can actually count to 10 before you speak or before you send an email, things like that. So how do you do that? Well, you start with the nest meditation, right? That's the basic self-awareness meditation. I need to know my number, my emotion, my sensation, and where my mind is. And then the next step is to go into the strongest sensation in my body. Okay, this has to happen in the body. This is not a mental process like the 100 benefits can feel like. This is very, very important that you learn how to go into and toward the thing you want to move away from. Because when you're running your stories and you're in a fight, you're avoiding the strongest sensation. You're avoiding feeling something. So it's key that you turn toward that as soon as you can. Sometimes it takes a couple days to like finally, you know, snap out of your trance and to turn toward it. Sometimes it takes a couple minutes. It's going to be different depending on the level of trigger, level of activation, your level of development, etc. But you got to learn how to do this. And in my private work with people, I take people into the heart and center of their experience. And it happens pretty fast. So this is key, okay? And when you're there, you want to find out. Most people are afraid. I was working with someone today, actually, and they haven't gone there ever. And so my statement to them is, well, you got to find out. Is this going to kill you or if something bad's going to happen? And this person had, fears that I had when I was learning this stuff. And one of this person's fears was that they were going to go mad, basically, and that they were going to have to be put in a psych hospital, right? So most of us actually are not in touch with the deep terror living inside of our bodies. And things like plant medicine or a really good healer can take you directly into that, and then you find out. And most people want to move away from it. They check out, they dissociate. So it's an art form to be able to take someone into their experience. So you want to learn that. And if you're working with a current therapist or a coach or someone, they don't know how to do that, you need to find someone that does. The sooner you get that handled, the better. Okay. And you're going to find out that nothing bad's going to happen, most likely. But, you know, you never know. I can't guarantee that, but most likely. So when you're triggered, basically, go into your experience and go for the strongest sensation. And it's like a wave. It comes and it goes and it fades. If you stay on the surfboard and you stay present, the moment you check out, you fall off the board and now you got to get back on it. And some people think they're on the board, but they're actually dwelling on the story and they're not actually feeling the experience. So you don't want to do that. You want to feel the experience. Okay, awesome. Feel free to write down your questions about that if you have them. Okay, so my recommendation on the repair is to make this an agreement in your partnerships from the get-go. Here's an example. Hey, honey, let's agree that when we fight, we agree to close the loops and repair it until we're both satisfied. And that if we get stuck, for whatever reason, we'll hire someone to help us learn how to get unstuck, and we'll do it well so we have the skill to clean things up in an efficient manner after we fight. So that I can own my part, you can own yours, and we've repaired it and we're cool again. Because when people don't do this, which is the majority of the population, you stack up issues and you compound conflict. And compounding conflict, like compounding savings, if you put money in the stock market or a 7% interest rate, it compounds over time. It grows exponentially. So your issues and your unfinished business with your partner and your anger and your resentment and all that stuff just gets bigger and burlier over time. And then it feels like a lot of work to kind of clean that up, and it can feel overwhelming, and a lot of people just medicate because they don't want to deal with it. It's understandable. That's not you, right? So you're learning how to make agreements with people to from the start. And for some of you, you're hitting the reset button in your current relationship, and you're saying, hey, let's add this agreement to our relationship. And then you'll find out if your partner's values you and the relationship enough to agree to something like this. To me, this is very basic, no-brainer to have this on board. And if they can't agree to that, then again, you got to ask why you're with them. All right, the cost of no or delayed repairs. Well, I just sort of mentioned it, but let's look at kids. So what happens to kids when we don't repair? So think about this. When your parents hurt you overtly or subtly, or however they did, and they never came back around and closed the loop, apologized, or did nothing, what was the impact on you? What was that impact? Because most of our parents in their generation didn't have any way to know how to do this. So it's not like it's their fault. They just didn't have access to the information, and they didn't care about it enough to learn, so they did what their parents did. Or they did sort of impulsive moves that didn't really help. So most of us, there are two things happened. We got hurt, and then we started crying, or we felt a lot of emotion about it, and we felt our feelings get hurt. We didn't get held in that either. So we got what I call the double whammy. You got hurt in however way, and then you got abandoned in your hurt and not attended to. So bam, bam. Most of us have two injuries with whatever happened, right? Dad hits you, and you go into kind of a traumatic freeze response, and then he never comes back around and cleans it up and acknowledges that and holds you in your tears, in your terror, and all that. And so what do? Well, you need love, so eventually you come around and kind of try to make it better by being cute or funny, you know, an hour later, a day later, whatever it is. I mean, it's amazing. In the most brutal, traumatized families, you know, kids are sitting in the abuser's lap an hour later because it feels so awful to be separated. Okay, so we're no different than children here. And this, as I've talked about before, further embeds the old groove in the brain. When we don't repair, that groove just stays the same or gets deeper. And, you know, the story goes in our mind that I'll never get what I want. Why can't we just figure this out? And then people hope, kind of hope and pray that it's going to get better, which does nothing. All right, so then we keep the trauma-drama loops hardwired in the brain. The groove gets deeper, the rut gets deeper, and we stay entrenched and attract more of the same. See, the bummer here is, in terms of sort of universal laws and how it appears to work in my experience, is the further entrenched we stay, we keep drawing in more trauma and drama and intensity into our lives so that we can clean this whole mess up and learn the lesson and move on to the next lesson. But a lot of us are kind of stubborn. So it's the cost. It's a big cost. And then, you know, the other cost, in my judgment, is we have disease in our bodies that happens over time. Okay, so I'm going to give an example. I'm going to give two examples in this class, one with kids and one with a former partner. The kids one I'm going to share now, the partner one I'm going to share in a little bit. And then I'm going to answer some of your Facebook questions in the private group because there's some good ones in there. All right, so I'm repairing with my children on a regular basis. Little things, right? It's just happening. So here's an example of what I say to my children. Hey, honey, come here. You got scared by me. Daddy raised his voice and that scared you. And now you're scared, hurt, and upset, right? And they nod their head, uh-huh, and their tears rolling down their face. That's right, I was mad. I did raise my voice. And I can see how that scared you. Got it. Hey, look at me. Give me eyes. Look me in the eyes. I see you. Daddy's here. I'm not mad anymore. Right? So imagine being a child and hearing that. it goes a long way, and we're done. And then, boom, what does my kid do? Bam, they bounce up, and they're playing again. It's just off to the races. So I have to keep this very succinct, right? And my kids are present, and they're not dysregulated because they're growing up in a very safe home. So they can actually hang with that conversation right there. And I notice how I try to keep it simple. I don't overly intellectualize the whole thing. I'm maintaining contact with them. Hey, look at me. Give me your eyes. Right here. Daddy's eyes are right here. Yep. There you are. Hey, I'm not mad. I was mad. Daddy got angry and I raised my voice. You're right. So I'm owning it, right? I did raise my voice and I can see the impact over there. You got scared, right? And part of this I learned in a parenting class I took when my son was starting to hit his sister, my daughter, and some of you have heard this story and it's pretty amazing. You know, my wife and I are therapist types, and dude, we ran out of tools. I was like trying everything in the book and it was just none of it was working, and basically hired my friend Christine Horn, who's amazing with children, and reminded me that I'm talking to them like adults, which they can't process and doesn't work. Get down on my knees, get at their level, and taught me basically how to do this. And you tell kids, for example, hey, you're scared, you're hurt. I tell them what's going on for them, which we might not do in adult relationships. That's projecting. But with children, they can't say, I'm scared, hurt, and upset, Dad. You know, 3 years old. It's not going to happen. So I say what they're feeling, my best guess. I just take my best guess, right? So this is really powerful stuff. So here's an optional comment I might say. Hey, I'm going to work on, hey, honey, look at me in the eyes again. One more thing. I'm going to work on not raising my voice because I don't want to scare you. Daddy's going to work on that. Another optional teaching, if he's still present, let's say it's my son, I say, and when you choose to hit your sister, I get really mad because I want us to be safe in our bodies. People aren't for hitting, remember? Yeah, we don't hit people. You can hit that pillow over there, or you can hit that couch, or you can hit the bed as hard as you want. Or you can hit me if I have a pillow up and I tell you, hit me. Because we do that in our home. You know, hitting's okay, just not people. Okay, so these are all have been very effective. And believe it or not, my wife and I have done things like this with each other, pushing on each other, hitting pillows, one of us is holding it up. That's actually, that can be sometimes what breaks the impasse. I had another friend say recently on Facebook, I reposted it because I thought it was so good. Him and his partner were stuck for days, and he went and got a bunch of whipped cream and a pie and basically threw it in her face. And she was so angry at first, and then she started laughing, and then he made another one and had it sitting next to her, and she took that one and threw it in his face. And then it turned into this whole thing, and they were starting rubbing whipped cream all over each other's bodies. So I'm not saying do that, but I thought it was pretty cool and creative. Sometimes we need to shock the system like that with a little state change. All right, so here's some rules of thumb. If I contributed in any way to hurting someone, it's my job to get clear on what exactly I did and then initiate a repair. I don't wait around for someone to do that for me. I'm an adult. I care. I'm proactive, so I'm going to make that one happen. Especially if I know that I did something or said something or was a little off or whatever, I'm going to initiate it. But I got to get clear. I'm not going to hurry up and run over there and apologize, which is what most people do, because that does nothing. Actually, what it does and why people do it is it dissipates their anxiety a little bit in themselves. It's like a discharge. I'm going to hurry up and apologize so I don't have to feel this anymore, right? That's why people do that. So another rule of thumb, I don't need the other person to get to completion. And I'm going to, you know, just learn how to repair 100% of the time if I can, because I aspire to that. and 80% of the time is amazing. Okay? I like the 80-20 rule with most things. The superhuman can do 100%. Most of us are, you know, we'll be lucky if we get to 80%. So shooting for 80% is more realistic. There's just going to, you're going to drop some balls here and there. So sometimes you might need to live with an open loop. That's another rule of thumb. What do I mean by that? Well, doing your best, even in yourself, to close up a loop. For example, a couple years ago, I had someone cut me off out of their life. Well, in my world, I closed the loop on, okay, that's, I can't do anything about that. They, you know, this is their choice, and I can't, they're not returning calls or emails or whatever. So I'm going to close it on my side as best as I can, knowing, though, that I'm the kind of person that the door is open. If they ever, in 20 years, if they came back to me and said, hey, dude, remember what happened 20 years ago, I'd be like, door's open. Yeah, let's go there. Bring it. It's on. So that's an open loop, or an open door policy, if you want to call it that. If any people that hate me in my life from birth till now want to come to me and say, hey, you hurt me, or this thing happened, I'm available for that, especially if I care about them. Like, sure, yeah, let's go there. Because I have the skills to immediately discharge the whole thing, right? I've had people just attack me, and I discharge the whole thing in minutes because I just own it. Oh, yeah, yeah, I did that. Okay. Yeah, I can see how it hurt your feelings. Totally. Ow, that must have been painful for you. And then, boom, they're not expecting that, right? Some people come in with their dukes up and they want to fight. I'm not interested in that. I want to, like, complete the thing. Another rule of thumb, don't expect a repair from them unless you both consent to make this an agreement in your marriage, family, relationship, etc., and have consented ahead of time. So I wouldn't be expecting any repairs from anyone. I know some of you are doing this. Well, why won't they repair? Well, they didn't agree to that. You guys never set up the agreement. And they don't know how. And they never learned. And it's not on their POS. They don't really care. Or they care, but not in the way you care. If you want to make that an expectation, that's your job to make it one. You need to say, hey, new agreement in our relationship. Are you on board? You got to sell it. You got to be like, here's the value of this. This is how it's going to help me and you, potentially. Are you up for that? Also, another rule of thumb, don't expect them to get over it. If they want to hang on to it, that's their choice. Some people want to hang on to this stuff and take it to their grave. More power to them. That's okay. So you don't want to wait for other people to get on with your life. All right, here's 7 keys to repairing. Number one is we have to be self-aware. You got to know yourself. Know what your triggers are. Know what the core issue is. Know what your core belief is. Know your core strategy, right? And have enough meta-awareness on yourself so that when you get the inevitable trigger and in conflict that's inevitable, you have some self-awareness as to what's going on. And when you don't know, because something new emerges, like you meet a new person and you're stuck with them for 7 days on a trip or something and you've never met them and all of a sudden you're like hating them for some reason, well, the first thing you want to do, right, is get curious. Like, huh, this person's really getting at me. Like, what's going on here on my side? Number two, second key to repairing is ownership. You got to be able and willing to own what you did or did not do. I'm not talking about defend and justify, just ownership. Like I said in the kid example, I raised my voice. That's called ownership. Not, well, I'm raising my voice because you never listen. That's not ownership. That's defending and justifying. Ownership is, yes, I raised my voice. I can see that that scared you. Third key to repairing is stop looking for an apology. I think one of you said this in the Facebook thread, which I'll speak to when we get to that. But a lot of us can look for apologies. Well, I'm not going to quote unquote get over this until they say they're sorry, right? And this is what is taught on the playground when two kids get in a scuffle is, okay, say you're sorry. And then when once they say they're sorry to the other kid, adults are like satisfied and they walk away. Conflict resolved. Because that's what they're doing at home. Just say you're sorry to your big brother. Just say you're sorry to your friend. Just say you're sorry to the teacher. Just say you're sorry to the principal and you won't get detention. Just say you're sorry. Okay, sorry. Hey, cool, sweet. Get out of jail, free. Nice. All I have to do is kiss ass and say I'm sorry. And that works. But it, as you know, for smart people, it does not work. It's super limited. So we can't do that. Instead of an apology, you want to look for acknowledgement, which in the kid example is what I did. I hurt you. I acknowledge that had an impact. What was the impact, honey? You know, if it's my wife, what was the impact? Well, I feel terrified, or I just feel my feelings got hurt. I can't believe you just said that to me. Oh, okay, got it. And I said, what was it exactly I said that really got you? Was it the fuck you, or was it this other thing? That was that. Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense, because you kind of have a trigger there, and then that's what you grew up with. Your dad said that stuff, right? Yeah. Ah, okay, it's making sense now. So I acknowledge that I said that, and it had that impact, and now we're separated. Now we're disconnected. So I'm acknowledging what happened. Owning it, acknowledging it. Number 5, be curious. Get their world and validate. Huh, what was that like for you? You mean, was it like this or was it like that? Oh, no, okay, it was like this, all right, uh-huh. Oh, and then what happened? So I'm staying curious. Boom, 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 boom. And then I validate. That makes sense that you're upset now. It makes sense that we're disconnected now. It makes sense that you shut down. It makes sense that now you're feeling under the gun and under attack, because I can see my behavior sort of, yeah, makes sense. Got there. And it makes sense given your history. Okay, got it. Number 6. 6th key to repairing. Commit to closing loops as much as possible. Just say, yeah, I'm going to close loops. And if it can't happen together, it's going to happen on my own over here. I can't tell you how many times there's been an unwilling person in my life. I just get it done over here. My parents, good example. They don't know how. They're not interested. They don't want to talk about it. Cool. I got it. I'll take care of that over here by myself. And it only makes me stronger, so I'm grateful for those opportunities. And yes, the repair is, in my experience, quicker if you have a willing participant. Key number 7 to repairing is, if they're unavailable or want to hang on, clear it for yourself alone. It's already been said, saying it again. Clear it. On your terms, in your own body, in your own heart, in your own mind. All right, so let's just talk about this apology for a minute. If you're going to apologize, don't lead with it. Right? That's the frantic person trying to discharge their anxiety and hurry up and move on. And it's what the vast majority of people do. Don't be that person. Stop that habit. It doesn't work. It's not effective. It only works to help you reduce your anxiety a little bit, your terror, your anger, whatever. And ultimately, though, it's not generative. It's not connection building. It's not trust building. So don't lead with it. Save it until the very end if you're going to do it. Okay, I have said before that I'm less and less into apologies and forgiveness, because it implies something was wrong. I don't live in the world of right and wrong. I do live in the world of cause and effect. That, okay, I do this and there's this impact. That's really helpful to know. And what are the benefits of that impact? How did it hurt and how did it help? Okay, I'm going for balance. And once in a while, like with my children, because I think apology is a developmental stage, I'll apologize once in a while. Hey, oh, I'm sorry that I just moved the chair and it stubbed your toe and now you're screaming and crying. So I might just, sorry just comes out of my mouth. Oh, so, oh, I'm sorry. Ow, that must have hurt. Ooh, ouch. Yeah, you got hurt there. Yeah, daddy just moved the chair and it just smashed your foot. Ah, ouch. Come here, I can hold you. Oh, you don't want me to hold you because you're mad at me? Got it, mommy's right over there. Or you want space? Okay, no problem. That's kid example. Adult example is after we've done a big, long process of repairing that takes 10 minutes or an hour or whatever, I look people right in the eyes and I say, I'm sorry. I'm really sorry. And for me, most of the time I'm doing that for them, not for me. Because that's what they want to hear. Because that's their personal operating system. They're still living in the world of sorry works for them. So I'm going to meet them where they're at. You know, I'm not going to be all stubborn like, I don't apologize because sorry is ridiculous. No, I'm going to consider my audience, my target person. Who am I in a fight with? Who do I need to clean things up with? Oh, it's that person? Yeah, they're definitely value apologies. So I'm just going to say I'm sorry, like my mom. Mom, I'm really sorry. I, you know, was just such an asshole for the last couple of years to you. Hey, thanks. That feels really good to hear, you know. She's going to say something like that. So remember, there's no like rules of thumb. Like I've got rules of thumb. I've got skeletons. I've got outlines. I've got suggestions and strong recommendations. And there's no exact formula here. Although I'm writing a nice outline for you to jump off of. Okay, that'll be done probably tomorrow. And in the course area, if you want to use it. It's a great skeleton that can just kind of, it's called How to Repair. And you can just kind of walk through and then and sort of use it as a general guide, right? But it goes the best, these kind of things go really well and the best when it's just sincere and genuine in your heart. And you're really owning it and you're really saying, hey, I want to clean this up between you and me. All right, here's the adult example. So a few years back, I had an emotional affair with a woman while I was on a meditation retreat. I was dating someone else, and that happened. So once this was found out by the woman I was dating, I could have led with, hey, sorry, I felt like you were not being supportive to me, and this other woman was supporting me. So kind of a little blamey, right? Which was basically what I said, first round, because I actually didn't know what was going on for me. I was a little taken aback by this woman. At the time, I was a little disconnected from the partner I was dating at the time, and so, you know, just it wasn't. I had very little awareness. So I had to dig deep with the help of a seasoned therapist, my men's group at the time, and find out why did I act out in that way? What was really going on for me? And the only reason I did that is because I'm this kind of person. I care about other people's feelings. I also care about my own self-awareness. I wanted to know. I was onto myself pretty quickly. I was like, well, no, there's more to the story here. There is a reason that this happened. Like, it's not like a coincidence. It's like, huh, what set the stage, right? With affairs, there's always a precursor, 100% of the time. And both parties play into it. There's always something that sets the stage and makes the person, the new person to come into the system available. They're like, ooh, something's going on here. So it turns out I was angry at my partner. I was feeling unmet, and I was judging her because she wasn't living according to my POS. I didn't know that I had a hidden expectation that she live like me. So my emotional affair was a fuck you to my partner at that time. An unconscious one, of course. So that was, there was also another layer of like feeling engulfed and trapped in a relationship, which was always my experience in every relationship I had. I started to feel a little engulfed and trapped, and like women were going to tie me down somehow, and I was going to suffocate, again, because of my injuries around my mom. So it was kind of like an escape hatch, a pressure release valve to get out, get away from the intensity of my inner feelings of engulfment. And that brought those feelings, the more I touched into them and worked on them, brought up rage and terror in me. So naturally, I'm going to act out when I don't have a lot of awareness. And the more and more awareness I have, the less and less I need to act out. And the more direct I can be, honey, I'm angry at you. I feel unmet, or I'm feeling my engulfment triggers and I want to blame you and I want to run. I want to shut down. I want to get out of here. I want to hit the eject button. And I'm looking around at other women because that's kind of the eject button. So there's always more to the story here in an emotional affair, for example. So I had to clean that up. And it took me a few months, several months, to clean it up because I didn't have all the information. So sometimes a repair takes this long because we don't know ourselves very well. We don't have the development. We don't have the consciousness. We're not seeing ourselves clearly. That's why we need other people around us. We need a community around us to see us and hold our feet to the fire and call BS on us, which is what my men's group did. Hey, dude, you're full of shit, some guy said to me. I don't buy it. Like, there's more to the story here. What's going on? You know, just very matter of fact, challenging me. And I was like on the defensive, like, what are you talking about? You know, trying to justify it. And then another guy pipes up and another guy. And pretty soon, you know, you ever heard that saying, like, one person calls you an asshole, big deal. 10 people call you an asshole, you better go buy a saddle. It's like that. So community reflection is critical to your development, and it applies here. To see yourself so clear that when you go and make a repair, you're actually owning the whole thing. You're aware. Uh-huh. Here's what I did. Here's what I didn't do. And those repairs go exceptionally well. When you try to repair because you're anxious and you want to hurry up and get connected again and you don't really want to feel what you're feeling, you're going to lead with things like an apology and how can I make it better and I'm so sorry, I'll never ever do that again, and you make promises and you say never evers and you talk really young like a teenager. That is all a sign that you're trying to hurry up and get away from your experience. So when your partner doesn't really buy your repair and they don't feel really trusting, they're onto you. They know something feels incongruent and off because you haven't done your work. You haven't really gone drilled down all the way to find out what it is. All right, so what I do, as I said, took me a few months to clean it up, and a few more months is an important point to gain trust again with her. So affairs are a funny one because usually the person that's on the receiving end of an affair, so let's say my partner at the time, if she has trust issues, which is almost always the case, and then I act out, it's going to play right into her childhood wounds and injuries around someone else betrayed her, took advantage of her, crossed a boundary, whatever. And I'm going to play right into that. So this injury of trust is helping her get to her bigger trust issues. So usually the person on the receiving end of the affair will blame the affair, and they're the victim. The person acting out is the perpetrator. And then everyone in their community comes around and rescues the victim, right? That's how the triangle goes. And that's how this whole culture's set up. Perpetrator, rescuer, victim. And that's a very limited model. Okay, very limited. Instead, the person on the receiving end of the affair needs to see, oh, I co-contributed to this whole thing. And my trust issues are just beckoning me to come back and heal them so that I can trust more. But in their, you know, limited self, people say, see, I told you so. That's evidence why I don't trust people. But we have to look deeper, folks. We got to look underneath the hood even deeper. There's always more to the story. Okay, questions. So I'm going to tackle a few questions first before you type in. Feel free to begin typing in if you want, but I think there were some good ones in the Facebook thread from when I said, hey, we're having a class on repair a couple days ago, and you started piping in with your comments. There were some really good ones. So here we go. Hi, Jason. I have a question about repairing baggage from a relational mess that occurred years ago. From my perspective, this has not been healed and continues to come up in our relationship. My partner is resistant and prefers to move on and leave it in the past, but I'm still feeling its effects. I'm interested in cleaning it up for me personally, but also with her as well. This is an excellent question. So the way I understand this, right, one person is kind of wanting to get over it and just move on. Hey, what's done is done. That's okay. They're entitled to that path if they want to take that. But I hear you saying, how can I clean it up for me and with her? Well, it depends on, I'd need to know the content here, the exact details. But I can infer here that you, one of you made a mess, right? Let's say it was an emotional affair, or some betrayal of trust somewhere along the lines, money, whatever it was. So if you aren't clear in yourself, then you can ask her if she's available. Hey, I want to clean this up. I know we've talked about it a ton. You feel like you're done, but I'd like one more shot. Are you open to that? So I just get consent first, right? Are you up for that? If she shuts me down and says no, then I'm back to myself. No problem. I clean it up in me. She might say, and if you approach it well, she might say, yeah, okay, I'll hear you out. Sure. And again, if I'm the one acted out, I would own everything down to the detail and get the impact. And I'd stay there until I completely got the impact. I might even take notes. So wait, the impact was this and that. Okay, got it. All right. Yeah, yeah. And then I'd validate. That makes sense. If it was her that acted out and I'm unfinished around her acting out, then I need to speak some truth. And if she's not up for that, she's like, look, I already said I'm sorry. Come on, forgive me already and let's move on. Then I got to see the benefits to that, right? Okay, she's not willing to go there. So how's that helping me in my journey? And do I want to be with someone who they did the sorry move and they think that's enough? It's not enough for me. Then I advocate for myself. If that's the case, I would stand up and be like, well, that doesn't work for me. And I would have to go back into more fighting and more conflict, and it might end the relationship. But I prefer to stand up for my integrity and what I need, period, every time. And if I don't get that, then that's very telling about the relationship. Right? If they don't want to dance with me in that way. And I don't want to force them to do it. They don't want to do it. They don't want to do it, right? I also don't want to hang on. If someone hurt me, it's like the parents thing. We don't want to continue to hang on to how our parents hurt us and tell a story that they fucked us up. That's inaccurate. Their limitations hurt you and they helped you. But I can guarantee you as a parent, parents bust their tail to do the best they can even when they're completely gone. They're doing that for a reason again. If we understand the reason, then it's like, oh, well, my dad was working his butt off because he had to put food on the table. Hello? You know, I couldn't have an emotionally available dad. It's impossible. So why keep hoping for that and why be angry at him? Okay, I'd like to hear about closing loops. My husband and I have an open loop going on, and I would like advice for closing it. All right, again, content is helpful, but let's just say... we won't say anything. I won't even guess, but I'll say, okay, you have an open loop and you would like advice for closing it. Similar to what I've said is you approach your husband and say, we have this open loop. Here it is. Do you agree that it's an open loop? Yes. Okay. Are you interested in closing it with me? Because I want help. We've tried ourselves. Are you willing to go to a professional and just close this one out? It could be one session with someone really good. No, I'm not interested in that. Okay. Are you complete then? Is it closed for you? Right. So I have to assess out, is my partner available? Are they not? Do they really mean it? Etc. It's going to be a lot easier if you're both like, yeah, yeah, let's tackle this one. Okay. When an apology is appropriate but not given, instead it's brushed under the rug and talked about what just happened triggers anger. If we are arguing and my husband says something hurtful and I cry, he will get frustrated, angry, and shut down. Right? Because he is getting triggered by your emotions, because he's unaware of what that brings up in him. I'm left to deal with my own emotions and soothe myself, self-talk. He may come to hug me later, but no apology or talking it out. Well, again, you agreed to this kind of relationship from the start, so you've trained your husband that you don't need this. And because of this class, you're kind of waking up to like how critical this is to have in your relationship. So you're probably frustrated that you're not getting that. So I would be owning that you haven't been clear about what you need. And if you have been clear about what you need and it's still not being met, then again, why are you in that relationship? So, you know, we have to like honor. It's like a little girl, like, hey, if you're a little girl and you're five, and do you deserve a hug, an apology, and a dad who's like really there for you? Of course you do. You didn't get it though, and you don't know that it's possible to have, but you can absolutely have that, and you deserve that. And people settle for good enough, and good enough actually hurts. If I'm crying for a reason, he sees it as just, he will be compassionate. Needless to say, this has definitely toughened me up over 20 years together. I can find many benefits to this, but it's a lonely place to be. I don't talk about this with anyone because I don't want sympathy. I want solutions on how to be validated, heard, and seen. Okay, if you want to be validated, heard, and seen, you do what you want. So you do that to him, and then you don't expect it in return. Unless you're willing to make it a non-negotiable. If it becomes a non-negotiable, I want to be validated, heard, and seen in this relationship, or I'm moving on, great. Get behind the non-negotiable and stop trying to change your partner and hope for it. Hope that he, you know, snaps out of his trance or something and figures it out. He doesn't value it. Okay, you can't expect him to do that. He doesn't value it. Okay, next question. I'm having some trouble with asking for repairs from my partner. It hasn't so much been the actual asking that's hard. It's the fact that I had to ask. The story in my head goes like, if my partner loved me, he wouldn't have done this hurtful stuff in the first place. Wrong. If your partner loves you, I guarantee you he will hurt you. Just through his neurotic behavior. That's called a relationship. And then on top of this, he would have felt the need to repair it on his own. It's like having to ask for love from my parents. Really triggering for me because it seems like a parent would naturally want to love, care for their child. Well, they don't want to love, care for their child. They do. They just all have a different style of doing that. And for some parents, it's actually literally dropping you off with a grandparent because you're so overwhelmed. That's love. Because they know themselves, they can't do it. Actually, grandma would be a better parent here, so she's going to parent you. And then you continue, just like a loving partner would naturally treat their partner with love and respect and want to repair it if they mess that up. Well, I think you're in a fantasy. Doesn't sound like you have a partnership where there's a really explicit, non-negotiable agreement around this. So I'm trying to be willing to see this a different way. I have a lot of resentment build up around some of these wounds. Makes sense. Of course you do. So I think I'm giving it to you as you go here. You know, I think some of you are getting closer to making certain things in your relationships non-negotiable, which I recommend. Get clear on what those are. For example, if my wife didn't repair and didn't own anything, I wouldn't be with her. I would be so gone, right? Because it's such a high priority for me. A value of mine and relationship and growth and evolution are where it's at. So I wouldn't hang with anyone. And I wouldn't hang with a friend like this. So you got to decide, how serious are you about this mattering to you and your integrity and who you are? Make it a non-negotiable. But also be careful of the fantasy of, if my partner just loved me, he wouldn't do this hurtful stuff. That's a fantasy. We hurt each other in relationship, period, despite our best attempts to not do that. When you get an next question, when you get an apology and it doesn't at all seem genuine, how do we deal? Also, expectations, how to stop expecting an apology. Yeah, when you get an apology and it doesn't seem genuine, how to deal? Well, if you trust yourself and you know yourself really well, you can just say, that doesn't feel genuine, I don't trust you right now. And then if I go, well, I said I'm sorry, and I get defensive, that's a good sign that now I'm in my wound and I'm just activated and it's my not enough wound, I'm not doing it right, and that's a common one for guys, right? And now you're dealing with some other whole thing. So stand up for yourself. Yeah, I don't believe you. I don't trust you. I'd like to feel your heart more. I don't feel your heart. Just say that. I want to feel your care and love for me while you apologize. I don't feel it. Just call BS on him. Okay, next question. How to manage feeling hurt at the same time you are dealing with not really getting a complete apology? If this was not a family member, I'd end the relationship. Hey, now we're getting somewhere. That's more non-negotiable territory, right? The incomplete apology is an explanation and 98% logical. This happened because of this. And my response in a loving tone is, yes, I can see that you acted that way because of this and that. Makes sense. Nice, you're getting better there. In that context, how do I help the person get that there was still an impact over here other than what I currently do, which is to share how I felt in the altercation? Oh yeah, and then they add, you're so emotional, as if being emotional is a bad quality. Yeah, most people have that judgment. You're so emotional, especially men to women or women to women. Yeah, you're so emotional. You're so needy. You're so dramatic. Everything's so intense for you. Why do we have to, you know, why do you make a big deal out of everything? Just own it. Yeah, I'm emotional. Totally. It's totally true. Yep, I make a big deal out of just about everything because I care. I'm that sensitive. You're right. That seems to upset you, but yeah, I like that about me. If I like that about me, then those kind of comments don't get me. They don't hook me, right? But back to your question, how to manage a feeling hurt at the same time you're dealing with not really getting a complete apology. Well, again, the gift of that, again, is go back to the original hurt where you didn't feel seen, because this is like a basic issue of you don't feel really seen and supported here, and you're asking for that. And some people just can't do it. You're asking them to do something they can't do. Which is a setup for frustration for both parties. So be, you know the person. If it's your son, know him, and he, you know, probably can't actually do the skill because he doesn't have it in him yet. So you can just keep modeling that and be with your hurt kid. Do the hurt kid meditation. Feel that all the way down in your body. Be unafraid of it. Stack up benefits to not getting apologies. Okay? They're there. And how to deal with having to ask for an apology in the first place? Why is it so hard to just own up in the first place? Again, you guys are, you know, asking the same question here, and I would say the same answer, which is people don't value it. It's not in their priorities and preferences of their personal operating system, like it is for you. It's just not there. They're not you. Stop expecting them to be like you. And if it's a need, genuine need, / non-negotiable for you, make it happen. family members, yes, are hard, but I prefer to never in a million years get an apology from anyone in my family for anything. I don't expect that, because most of them can't do that. So why would I frustrate, bang my head against the wall? Okay, last page of Facebook questions. There's a lot of them here, and then I want to hear from you. How to navigate sharing the impact when that's met with justification, rationalization, and other defensive responses from our partner, no matter how non-blaming we were when sharing it. Yeah, the most skillful person in the world can share and deliver like an eloquent, totally ownership comment or statement, right? And it can still set the person off. That happens all the time. So we can't expect that people aren't going to react. So I prefer to just go in kind of worst case scenario and get my goggles on, like, and just plan for the worst. And if they don't react and get triggered, I'm kind of like, sweet, that wasn't a big deal. But I like to go in thinking, assuming the worst, like they're going to freaking lose it here. And I'm going to say it anyway in a super skillful way. And they still might lose it. And then when it's met with justification, rationalization, and other defensiveness, you can just call that out. This is where we can be a little messy and say, you know, I'm just projecting that you're being really defensive right now. You can say that. You can also say, I don't feel heard. Yeah, I still don't feel heard. I don't feel understood. And I don't feel heard is the simplest. I am hearing you, right? Well, okay. I don't feel heard. So now you're at an impasse. But like I said with my wife, like if she says that, that's my sign. My rule of thumb is I don't get my wife until she says I get her, period. It's a really good rule of thumb I recommend. Okay, I'm going to pause there because this one's a longer one. Let me just scan it real quick. This part's pretty good, I think. I'd like to know what rituals or practices we can do so that we don't make a big enough mess that even needs a repair. Fantasy, probably. How does one bring up things that have gone off track or call the other person out in a loving manner? What rituals and practices can you do to avoid the mess? Well, you have really clear agreements from the beginning that both parties completely agree on, and just like a really good business relationship, right? You have the 10 commitments, you have the 10 agreements, you have whatever it is, and you agree, and you have a shared language, and you have shared tools. All that's preventative measures to avoid this stuff, and I just find that works really well. It doesn't mean messes aren't going to happen. They're still going to happen all the time. But not as much and not as gnarly, probably. Okay. All right, more questions from you. Are all triggers rooted in childhood wounding, or is it possible we collect more wounding as adults and subsequently create new triggers as adults? My experience is it's all childhood stuff. And some of us had some pretty big injuries in high school. Some of us had big injuries in our 20s. Some of us had big injuries in our 30s. And they can continue. So, you know, but when we find ourselves in an adult relationship in our 30s, let's say, it's anything that happened previously. Some of us, our first love at 16 or 17 was one of the most healthy relationships we had, ironically. And when that ends or when that ended, we got pretty hurt by that. That was, you know, for a lot of people, that was their first big heartbreak. And then around that becomes a huge contraction. People get really, they have a lot of trepidation when they go into the next relationship. So that's an example of a late teen injury, young adult injury that can really mess someone up for life if they don't deal with it. But yeah, I'd say it's mostly childhood stuff. Okay. How to navigate when someone asks for an apology in the form of blame, like wanting an apology for something you did, but it's really not mine to own. The last time this happened, during the course, I actually said I wouldn't apologize for what I said because it was true for me and that I was sorry he was feeling that my intentions were otherwise. He really wanted the apology, but my experience in the past, even if I did so, he doesn't believe me. It leads to the whole bad, doubly bad, infinitely bad, can't do it right trigger. All right, good one. Yeah, I appreciate, sounds like you have some integrity there for yourself and your worldview and the way you see yourself that you don't need to apologize. And remember, just the challenge I would offer there, the gentle challenge is if that's what he needs in his POS, in his operating system and how he does life, and it would help, you might want to give, like throw him a bone and give him that. If it's not going to like, if it feels like it doesn't violate your integrity or who you are, you might offer that. So something to consider for you. Again, I'd probably need to know the details. And you're asking, do I apologize anyway? Well, again, sometimes people, we got to apologize for other people, right? Because that helps them. Wow, addressing each of our comments on your post that is relevant to the current section is so helpful. Thank you for addressing the fact that you are learning how to help everyone here, in which it's a win-win for all. I'm grateful for your input and respect your thoughts. Cool. You're so welcome. What else? Yep. It's top of the hour, and it's been a great ride here. I'm curious what else is cooking for you, if anything, before we stop. I feel like I packed a lot in there, so cooking up a storm. Oh yeah. Okay, Kevin. I've owned and worked to clear trust issues arising from lies and abandonment with my partner. She chooses to hold it, and I feel use it playing the victim. How can this get closed? Good question, man. So if I was sitting with the two of you, would, and you said the whole thing, would I believe you? You know, and it's pretty clear to me when I sit with two people, a couple, in this exact situation, and the guy's like, look, I don't know how many times you want me to say this, but you're like now being the victim and you're holding on and blah, blah, blah. Chances are he's missing something. So I'm gonna just challenge you that you might be missing something. Yeah, she could be stuck with her stuff and it plays into her childhood. That could be very true. And if I'm you, I'm going to just, if you have never gotten outside help around this, I would ask you that first. Have you gotten at least 5 mirrors and 5 reflections of people you completely trust that would cut through your bullshit and tell you like it is? What would these 5 people say about the situation? And would they be like, yeah, man, wow, you've said it all. Okay. Or would someone with a sensitive radar like me go, eh, I think you're missing something there. And sometimes, guys, it's how we say it. We can own everything down to the letter and down to the details of ownership and clarity and get their world and validate. And because we're not in our heart, that's it. And again, this one took me years to get with my wife. And I got the skill down, right? But what I didn't have down was being in my heart while doing the skill. And that's the repair. Like, I can say to my kids everything I said in the kid example, and if I'm like in my head or closed off, it's just not going to have the same impact, period. So I'd challenge you there just to potentially see that there's a blind spot of yours. And let's pretend that's just, you already uncovered all your blind spots and that was totally impossible. Then you're dealing with, a person who won't let go. And if I'm you and I really love them, I'm going to hang in there. And I'm going to say, cool, what else do you need, honey? And so that's okay with me that you're frozen still or that you're still really hurt here. That's okay with me. You know, I love you still. And is there anything else you need? Is there anything else I can do to help you calm? And then if I also really love her, I'm going to challenge her, because love is a balance of challenge and support. It's not just a bunch of support, folks. I'm going to call BS on my partner sometimes. I'm going to be like, look, I'm projecting that there is some stuck issue for you here that ties into your past. What I know about you and your past and your dad is there was a big betrayal, and that really hurt you and rocked you, and my betrayal also rocked you. And I think my betrayal tied into your past, and I want you to get looked at. Well, I'm going to my therapist. Well, I don't think your therapist is doing shit. You know, you might challenge. Sometimes we need to like turn up the heat a little bit to like get in there and like turn up the heat on the fight. So just a few thoughts there. Hopefully that helps. Can you give a quick and dirty explanation of how to close a loop on your own? Sure. So someone cuts me off. I'm on my own, right? All right. What did I do? What can I own? Well, let's see. How did I contribute to the cutoff? How did I contribute to them going away? Well, I did raise my voice. I was kind of an asshole that one time. Oh, yeah. I was judging them silently for like a year straight, and I never told them directly to their face. Yeah, okay, I did that. What else? So, and then let's say I have a big judgment of them. They're a bully, and they cut me off because they're a bully. Well, I'm going to do the process. Core complaint, they're a bully. I'm going to work the method on that, and I'm going to say, yeah, I'm a bully too. I'm going to look at all the places in my life where I'm a bully. So I own and don't pretend that that trait doesn't exist in me. I'm going to own it. And then I'm going to stack up benefits, in my case, to how that helped me, how being cut off helps me. So I can be grateful for the cutoff. I can even be appreciative that this has happened in my life and be like, oh, wow, this is helping me on my journey. I don't like it, and I don't prefer it, and all right, I'm going to get to, like, this is helpful. It's hurtful and it's helpful. So I want to see both sides of any situation. So that's one way to close a loop. And some of us, here's a piece we haven't talked about, and I'm not going to go into it in a big, big way here, but guilt. Some of us have guilt about how we've behaved in the past, right? We don't like how we treated someone. We don't like how we acted in college or whatever. And if we're still guilting ourselves about that, that is a ton of wasted energy. So you want to learn how to clear that too. And that's kind of a way to close a loop. Is get right with yourself around your guilt. And one quick way to do that is, again, to stack up how your behavior at age 20, let's say, if that's the example, in college, helped other people. How did it help Joe? How did it help Sue? How did it help Bill? How did it help Frank? How did it help Annette? How did it help Doris? How did it help, right, when I hurt that many people, how did it help them? And then eventually the charge goes down and I can, like, live guilt-free. Nice, Kevin. Good to hear. Cool. All right, friends. I think we're at time. I'm really just feeling love right now for some reason. It just feels good. I'm really appreciative of you and what we're going through here together. And wow, we've been on a ride, and we've got another week, and again, we're going to continue. A core group of us is just going to keep going, slightly different format, and I'm going to share all the details on that next time, and I'm stoked about that. So yes, we're going to cover boundaries next time, but I also want you to be thinking about your questions at large from the course, and we'll go longer next time. We might go an hour and a half, just to make sure we can get everybody's question in if you got one, and see if we can tackle those. So boundaries and questions and closure next time, and next steps. All right, that's kind of what we're covering next time. All right, let's stay active in the group. It's been a really interesting week in there. I'm appreciating everyone in there in the ways you're challenging me, challenging each other, supporting each other. It's really cool. Let's do this. Let's keep going. Okay, talk next week. Ciao.